Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the 31st episode of the Triborough Podcast. I'm your host, always, Justin Alonso, joined on the other side of the WNHU 88.7 WNHU studio, Nicholas O'Brien. How you doing?
It's the 32nd episode.
I did say 32nd.
You said 31st.
Well, no, because last time I said 31st. Oh, Stan, go! No way! Yahoo!
So if you couldn't tell, we are currently recording as the Sunday games are still playing.
Giancarlo Stanton just hit a grand slam to give the Yankees the lead.
My goodness.
Jesus Christ, he kicked that too.
You know, I guess we could give updates as the games go along.
417, 110.6 miles an hour.
Jesus.
Jesus Christ.
A Stantonian blast.
Ah, shut up, John.
So we're back, another week of games. Almost in the books, besides the Sunday games, mm-hmm. of course. But a lot better looking for the Mets end overall, but still...
One game.
Yeah, still not quite where we want to be.
Yeah.
But things are looking better at the very least.
If you cannot tell, things are looking good for the Yankees. There are some things I am concerned about that we'll get into. But yeah.
Without further ado,
let's get into the Bronx.
Now entering the Bronx.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Bronx, where we got a lot to talk about.
Of course.
So we haven't seen you guys since, for you, the first Arizona game would have happened, but we haven't talked since the Arizona game, we haven't talked since before that series. Just to wrap it all up, the Yankees took 2 out of 3 in Arizona. They're 1-1 with the Blue Jays right now, where we're currently recording. It is the bottom of the third with 2 outs. The Yankees are winning 5-1, so in a pretty good situation there. But yeah, before we get started, as always, the Triborough FD. We got some bad news with Jonathan Loaisiga. He strained his right flexor tendon.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
And he is getting season-ending surgery. Not Tommy John, but he's getting surgery. Verdugo, you suck. How do you ground out there? But, yeah. This probably is the last we've seen a while ago with the Yankees.
Yeah.
Because he's not under contract for next season. He's done with service time. He had so much potential, but just the injuries.
Just can't stay healthy.
Like, I think that... I could be wrong, but I think he's only had one season with over 50 innings pitched.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of those things where Baseball Reference. Baseball Reference. Do you want to, like, not be dumb? All right. Looking at it, yeah. He had 1 year above 48 innings pitched. Granted, he pitched 70 innings, and he had a 199 ERA plus. So he was absolutely dominant, but it's just. Sucks to say.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. And, I mean, it's not just Loaisiga. It's, like, entire baseball world is dealing with injuries to elbows and shoulders. And there's a ton of arm injuries just going around. And then to have this, Loaisiga was really set up to have... I mean, he always was to have a bigger role each year, but he just could never stay on the field. And it's really unfortunate because, like you said, it's probably his last time as a Yankee, so who knows who's going to take the flyer on him.
He had a high potential to be a great closer.
Yeah.
To be a great closer.
Yeah.
But it's just the injuries and, yeah, it just sucks.
It's very unfortunate.
And then to get in some good news, Gerrit Cole is expected to start throwing either Monday or Tuesday. But something interesting enough is he has been doing a lot of plyometric work to test his arm strength. Where I don't know exactly how that works, but it's not throwing a baseball, but it's like still testing how strong the arm is without putting strain on the arm.
Interesting. I've never heard of that.
I don't know how it necessarily works, but like he talked about it and just how he made a joke on the broadcast because he was on, I think it was the second Arizona game, maybe the third one, and he was talking about how he was making jokes like he was throwing lefty because he missed throwing so much.
Right.
And let's just say he should not be a broadcaster. I love Gerrit Cole. I love his personality, but he should just not be a broadcaster. He's a goofball, and I love it. And this isn't injury related, but I just wanted to kind of mention it. Rougned Odor is back with the Yankees. He signed a minor league deal with an opt-out July 1st if he's not called up. Just infield depth.
Yeah.
Not much to talk about. And for the series, just so everyone knows, we're going to be changing up how we're doing it.
Yep.
Where we're not going to be going game one, yada, 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 yada. We're going to be kind of going more big picture and say, like, oh, took 2 out of 3. Like, for Arizona, I have kind of 3 big takeaways. The first one is I just put Volpe Meister.
Volpe Meister.
Where he has been incredible. So this is, and this is including the games that have happened now. So in 2023, he had a 20, because the thing that impressed me the most is how little he's swinging and missing.
Yeah.
In 2023, on fastballs, he had a 22.4 whiff percentage. On breaking pitches, he had a 33.9. On off-speed, 36.6. This year, on fastballs, 12.5. On breaking balls, 15. On off-speed, 0.
Jeez.
So just to like go side by side, in 2023, on fastballs, 22.4 against 12.5, 10% lower.
Yeah.
For breaking pitches, 33.9 to 15. That's 19 points lower. Off-speed, which you struggle with the most, 36.6 to 0.
It's insane.
That's the part that, like, almost with Spencer Jones, where it was just the swing and missing, or lack thereof, was the part that impressed me by far the most.
Definitely. And just looking at Baseball Savant, like, his overall whiff percentage is 95th percentile.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I got this information, too, by the way, just so everyone knows. I will say, like, you look at his Baseball Savant page, some of the stuff isn't that impressive, right. But I also don't... Because I feel like guys like him aren't going to have the sexiest Baseball Savant page.
Right.
Where it's kind of just like slap the ball the other way, get contact. Like, they're not going to have these breaking numbers. But then you also see guys like Joey Gallo, who will have 99th percentile, 100th percentile in so many different things, but he's not a good MLB hitter.
Yeah.
So that's why I like analytics. I think there's definitely a point for them in sports. But you also have guys like Derek Jeter, who didn't have the best in certain things with like as a hitter, but that's because that's not what his game was.
Right.
Ichiro, I'm sure, was the same way. Didn't have the best, but that's because he wasn't trying to hit a home run every at bat. He wasn't trying to kill the ball. He was just trying to slap it the other way or just wherever the defense gave him a spot, took the spot.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing with analytics. I mean, I'm, I guess, the more analytical mind of the two of us, but even I know there's a point that it doesn't tell you everything.
Yeah.
Because guys, like you mentioned, more contact-oriented guys, they're not going for the high exit velocity. So they're, you know, their average exit velocity is going to look bad. But like, oh, if it's bad and they're not hitting the ball hard, that means they're not a good hitter. But again, that's not their game. Like you mentioned, like that they're trying to just slap the ball. They're not going for the 110-mile-an-hour home run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going for the 60-mile-an-hour dribbler that gets on the first base.
Yeah. To put in perspective, he has an 89th average exit velocity, which is 48th percentile. I'm very curious how that matches up with other shortstops.
Let's see.
Can you get that?
Yeah.
I don't know if you can.
Let's see.
Because when it comes to a position like shortstop, second base, you're not going to have the best pitchers or the best hitters. So to have a shortstop with that and have a 95th percentile whiff percentage while walking 71, being 71st percentile in walks, where if you look at last year, last year, 8.7 walk percentage, this year, 11.8. Last year, 27.8 strikeout percentage, this year, 20.6.
Right.
Granted, short sample size, but still very impressive.
Yeah. Now, what did you, I forget, what was it?
The average exit below for shortstops.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, so he, among all shortstops right now, he currently ranks 13th with 81.9 average exit velo.
Hmm.
Bobby Witt's first with 101.
Yeah.
Which is just insane.
Short sample sizes, but still.
Right. But, you know, guys ahead of him, Lindor, Correa, Zach Neto, Ezekiel Tovar, Ellie De La Cruz, CJ Abrams, Trey Turner, O'Neill Cruz, Mookie Betts, Dansby, Gunner, Bobby.
Yeah.
So still top 15.
Yeah. And for a guy that's not his, because you talk about how many of those guys. How many of those guys are, like, power a very important part of their game?
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just off the top of my head, Betts, Lindor, Witt, because he went 30-30 last year. Just how many of those guys, Correa, right. Turner more and more over the years.
Yeah.
Power's in a huge part of their game. That's not really Volpe's thing.
Right.
So yeah. I very impressive start from him so far this
Definitely.
Season. And then you kind of saw going in or towards the end of the series, the Pens started to get more and more gassed.
Yeah.
Where that wasn't too big of a problem in Arizona. There were like a couple runs that were given up, some with the ghost runner, some unearned runs. That became a lot more of an issue in the Blue Jay series. I'll get into that later. But just overall, going 6-1 in that stretch is absolutely incredible.
Oh, yeah.
You had the Astros that were a game away from the World Series and the Diamondbacks that were in a World Series. You played both of them on the road, and you went 6-1 facing their best pitchers that obviously are healthy. Without your ace, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Like that, it cannot be understated how good that is, especially for a team like the Yankees that usually don't get off to a hot start.
Right. Yeah, and we talked about it last week, obviously, more in depth about the Astro games. But like you said, to then go from the Astros to the Diamondbacks, who made the World Series, I would say got better in the offseason, and you still take 2 out of 3. So I think that's huge when you can, and it was very close to being able to sweep that series, too.
Yeah.
So, and just excellent start.
Definitely. That's really all I had for Arizona. I have a funny story. So we were in class when the third game was happening, and there was a presentation. The professor was sitting right behind us, and I had my computer like this, the brightness all the way down so you couldn't see it. Ketel Marte hit a home run, so I just whisper, and Nick's sitting right next to me, I just whisper as low as possibly I can, I fucking hate Ketel Marte. And... yeah.
Yeah. Shocked I understood what you're trying to say.
I do not know how you heard it. But yes, we find a way to watch. Even yesterday, I was at a friend's house and I had the Yes app up on my phone.
Oh,
and it's like,
course.
It's a blowout. Why are you watching?
And then it was not
then
a blowout.
Then it was not a blowout, which we'll get into more later. Actually, I'll get into that now.
Okay.
Because I really did want to talk about the bullpen.
Yeah.
So it definitely is getting gassed where you look at the Yankee starters. Marcus Stroman's the only one that's pitched 6 innings. He's done that twice. And also, no earned runs. Very impressed by his start so far. No other pitcher's even gotten 5 innings.
Right.
That is not good.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last week, the bullpen is the 4th most innings pitched in baseball. They're 23rd in ERA in that span. Starters are 20th in innings pitched.
Mm. Yikes.
So, in all the information from FanGraphs, it's one of those things of you also had Loaiza going down, so that definitely doesn't help. You had like a 9-3 lead yesterday. The final score was 9-8. It's very tough to keep this sustainable.
Yeah.
To where, yeah, you could have a very good bullpen. They had the best bullpen in baseball. But if you're not having starters go at least 5 innings, like
right.
We're begging starters to go 5 outside of Stroman.
Right.
Like right now, Luis Gil is he's at 4 innings. I think he has like 84 pitches right now. Granted, 1 inning, I think the first and the third inning, he just had a lot of pitches. But still, you can't be having that.
Right. I mean, we saw it last year with the Mets. Mm. I mean, the amount of
times. By the way, 4 innings pitched, 90 pitches.
Right. And so he's barely going to make 5
yeah.
if he comes back out. But you saw it last year with the Mets, just guys not being able to work deep into games. You know, it was always 5 innings, 5 innings, 5 innings, if that. You know, I think it wasn't until May or something like that. It was Joey Lucchese, I remember that. I just forget the month. The Hat was the first starter to reach the 7th inning, to throw a pitch in the 7th inning. It took them like a month to get to that point.
I will say with the Yankees, at least, in years past, they do kind of slow play pitchers.
Right.
Where like the first month, they'll kind of like build it up.
Yeah.
But they also in the past would then have the carousel going with the bullpen, with sending guys up, bringing them back up.
Right.
They're not really doing that. I don't think they've made one roster move for that so far this year.
Yeah, and like you said, it's just not sustainable because you have pitchers that are going 5 innings, and this is just a baseball thing as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sound very, like, old-headed, but, like, starters don't go deep in the games anymore,
mm-hmm.
so you need you know, a sixth inning, a seventh inning, an eighth inning, a ninth inning reliever. So you need four guys, like, each day if your starter's only going five innings. Mm. And what, there's eight or nine in the bullpen? Am I right?
Eight. Because it's 13 pitchers, five starters.
Right. So it's eight guys in the bullpen. If you need four a day, sure, you work some guys, like, back-to-back days. Mm-hmm. But you're using your whole bullpen in 2 days, call it. Yeah. So it's just, it's not sustainable, and you're just going to overwork your bullpen, then your bullpen gets tired, and then you keep overusing them, and then they're not, what's it called, they're not productive. And
because just, they're being overused.
Right. It's just a big whole thing. I mean, I'm telling you, like, last year if the Mets was just...
not good.
Right. Because of that exact reason.
Yeah. And just to add to my point earlier, Anthony Volpe in a two-strike count takes a ball the other way to where they aren't hitting them. It's almost like exit velocities and everything. No, but it really, and this is, I think, more emphasized and accented, because if that's the right word, because of Gerrit Cole not being there. And yeah, he's starting to throw, but you'll be lucky if he comes back for July. I think it's either May 26th or May 27th is when he can be activated from the 60 day.
Right, it's the end of May.
It's the end of May. Like, if you get him back in, or June, not July, if you get him back in early June, you are incredibly happy.
Definitely.
Call that 2 months.
Yeah.
You need to get these guys to go deeper in the games.
Yeah.
And, like, as much as I love Luis Gil, four innings is not going to work.
No.
You need to get more depth.
Right.
And it also doesn't help that Loizaga goes down. Canley, granted, he's coming back, but still. Like, Clay Holmes has been very shaky to start the year. Sorry about that. Ian Hamilton, who's been incredible this year, he had 3 earned runs last night. So it's like, you have to find a way to, if not get these guys deeper into the game, find some sort of way to hobble together. You're going to be a 2-3 inning guy. You're going to be a 2-3 inning guy.
Right.
Or just something.
Yeah.
Maybe call more guys up. Make more reliever for cash consideration trades, which he's loved doing. Just...
Yeah, I mean, you're starting to see a bigger emphasis on the long reliever. I feel like a lot of teams have one, maybe even two guys who can give you multiple innings at a time. But it's because starters can't go 5 innings anymore. Forget 5 innings, like 6 innings. Because, you know, it's either a endurance thing or it's just, you know, you also have to give credit to the hitters because they, you know, they work pitchers as well.
Yeah.
So they have high pitch counts. I mean, like, we were just talking about Heal. He has 90 pitches through 4 innings. Mm. So if he starts the 5th and he gets through it, that's his last inning. Yeah. You're not going to pull him out with over 100 pitches in the 6th inning.
And to add to your point, one, they have him on a pitch count. Like, last week he was at 85. Now he's at 90. They may give him a batter or two. But the Blue Jays pitcher, I forget his name, he got pulled after 3 innings. He didn't come out for the 4th. And Kevin Gausman only went 1 1/3. Granted, he got lit up yesterday.
Yeah.
But still, Kevin Gausman going 1 1/3, that's like...
Yeah.
So, pitchers definitely aren't going as far. And that kind of goes with what you alluded to earlier about how guys are just getting hurt. To the point where the MLBPA literally had to issue a statement about it that even though the players just said, do not shorten the pitch clock because 2 seconds, if... I saw, Nick, if you will only watch a game because of 2 less seconds, what are you doing? You're not a true fan.
Right.
Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was fine the way it was last year, and to just shorten it by 2 seconds, which doesn't make, it's going to save 5 minutes? Maybe.
If you can't watch 5 more minutes, you're not a fan.
Right, and it's just, it doesn't make any sense because you're already having pitchers being injured. Maybe it's not entirely the pitch clock fault, but if you think about it, they're going max effort basically every pitch, and now you have less time in between pitches to kind of take a breath and recover, and then they're going max effort again and max effort again. I mean, it's just a recipe for disaster.
That's how you get hurt.
And you're seeing it this year. Like, the amount of pitchers and star pitchers at that are getting hurt. I mean, just this past week, Shane Bieber's getting Tommy John. That came out of nowhere. Spencer Strider, it has a strained UCL. He's on the IL. Who knows if he needs surgery? And that's not talking about guys who started the year on the IL, like Sandy, who got Tommy John. So it's just, it's
Sandy
an epic.
Sandy got Tommy John?
Yeah.
When?
Last year. That's why he's out for the year. He has Tommy John.
I completely forgot about that.
Exactly. Like, it just, it.
That's your point. The 2022 Cy Young winner, I completely forgot he got Tommy John.
Right.
Like, that's.
And he's missing the entire year. Like, it's an epidemic in baseball, and it's just, it's really unfortunate.
It's not good. Like, they need a,
something has to change.
Guys are going, I'm not sure you mentioned on here, but you've talked about this a lot, either off camera or on the radio show, that guys right now are just throwing. They're not, right now you have throwers. You don't have pitchers.
You don't have pitchers, no.
Where that's what, like, a Gerrit Cole, right now, like, yeah, he throws hard, but he's a pitcher.
Right.
You had Zach Greinke, where at the end of his career, throughout his entire career, Clayton Kershaw, where they are pitchers. The best pitchers, they don't have to have that elite velo, because they're going to be pitchers. Obviously, I'm not saying every pitcher is going to be Clayton Kershaw.
Right.
But if players focused more on having better pinpoint control, taking a couple of miles off, like, if I'm thinking of the best pitchers of all time, most of them don't have that crazy velo outside of Nolan Ryan.
Right.
Like, Pedro, yeah, he had velo, but he was incredible at
dunking. Like, 96, 98. Like, I don't really think if he touched 100 all too much. Like, you don't need to be throwing 100, 100 plus. Exactly. You can live in the 96 range.
Yeah. But, yeah, you had Randy Johnson, but that's because he was 7'5".
Right, and he's handing the catcher
the ball. He's handing the ball to the catcher, so killing birds.
Even, like, if he threw 95, it's coming in at, like, 200.
Yeah. It's...
Yeah, it's just... We can go on and on about it.
Really,
it's
can.
Really unfortunate.
And... Nice, Glaber. Glaber had a blooper. But getting into the offense a lot, because we just did talk about the pitching a lot.
Yeah.
The offense is very hit or miss. Where in, so this is, including today, they played 10 games. They've been shut out twice. They scored 5 or more runs in 7 games. The other game was 4. Where very good in the other games, but there's also, I will give them in the Arizona game, Zach Allen just shoved. Like, that's Zach Allen.
Yeah, he's
one
ace.
Of the best pitchers in baseball. He is, not every team's number one is an ace. He is a legitimate bona fide ace. Say what you want about that. But against the Blue Jays, they had Yusei Kikuchi, who the Yankees do pretty well against, and they just did not work the count. But I will say they've been very good at this year, but they just... Yeah, I'm not really complaining about the offense, more so just saying it's a weird trend.
Right.
That the way that this offense is, you would think that they wouldn't really get shut out. Like, they would scratch together a run sometime.
Right. Someone's bound to run into a home run.
Or even just the way they work the pitches.
Yeah.
That you're going to get a reliever that 2 batters in, he's at 20 pitches or like 18 pitches.
Right.
Where just, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, is kind of a little hypocritical from what we were saying earlier, but, you know, the team isn't really hitting the ball hard. And yes, it doesn't mean everything, but it's statistically proven that a harder hit ball is more likely to become a hit.
It means more. Overall, for a team, I think it means more.
Yeah.
But you have to break it down player by player.
For sure. But just looking at Fangraphs, the Yankees right now rank 26th in hard hit percentage. And they rank 27th in barrel percentage.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not barreling the ball. They're kind of living on the edge with not small ball, but, like, you know, dinks and doinks. There's not a lot going on there.
I will say part of that is because kind of your big guys haven't really gotten going yet.
Right.
In the
yeah.
Department. Where I think Soto has 1 home run, Judge has 2, which he got in the last game in Arizona, and yesterday in the Toronto game. Stanton hit a grand slam, hit a home run yesterday, so hopefully that's...
This is the start of a Stanton streak.
Yeah, so it's just...
Yeah, you're
right.
It's
one of those things where I think kind of like the big boppers haven't really gotten going.
Definitely.
So you're having guys like Oswaldo and Volpe, who literally said in the offseason, their goal was to not hit the ball, not looking for insane exit. It was literally just to make... bat-to-ball contact.
Yeah.
So I think that has to do a lot to do with it.
Oh, definitely.
And even Soto, yeah, he has a high average exit velo, but that's just because he runs into it because of how good his swing is.
Right. He doesn't need to, like, have that powerful swing.
Yeah.
He's so smooth that it just comes off the bat hard.
And even to add to that, he has the lowest strikeout percentage of his career.
Right.
So it could be just one of those things where he's not really going for that much power. He's going for more conservative approach in a weird way.
Yeah.
Which I don't have an issue with because he has a 172 WRC plus on the season so far.
Right.
So if you want to do that, I don't care how you do it.
Yeah, exactly.
It
works for you, so who am I to tell you not to?
Because we're talking about how the Yankees aren't hitting the ball hard. Oswaldo, 178 WRC plus. Anthony Volpe, 211 WRC plus.
Right.
Aaron Judge, if you go back the last five games, not including today, so all three of the Arizona games in the first two games of the series, he had a 241 WRC plus with a 26.1 walk percentage. And kind of just talking about Judge, he's historically been a slow starter, and I don't really have an issue with it. And by the way, they did put Luis Gil in for the fifth inning.
Right.
Because I mentioned this on the radio broadcast that in 2022, the year that he broke the AL home run record for most home runs was 62. It took him six games to get his first home run, 14 games to get to his second.
Right.
So it's one of those things, if you look at him year in, year out, he's a slow starter and there's not really that much of an issue with it, in my opinion, because you have so many guys around him that are just hitting.
Right. So you don't need him. And, you know, we've talked about it on the radio, and I believe we mentioned it last episode as well, that the guys hitting behind him takes off the pressure from him. So to your point, if he's having a slow start but the other guys are hitting, then so be it. Let him just get into his rhythm. But then you have the basically mirror of that in the Mets, where their big guys aren't hitting but no one else is hitting. So it's more pressure on the big guys to start hitting. So that's the difference between the two teams right there. The rest of the Yankees lineup is hitting when the rest of the Mets lineup is not.
Yeah, and that I think goes with, let me just get this out, where it is kind of tough because that is why they took out Luis Gil, by the way, because he let up a double to Vladdy. But Rizzo, like his numbers, you look at his Savant page, he's not really doing that well.
Right.
He almost had a base clear and double today. He just hooked a foul. His at-bats are okay. I know some people say like he looks like he changed his stance. The overall numbers aren't really good whatsoever. Like no matter which way you do it, he has a 633 OPS. And to put it in perspective, I didn't realize how high it was, but he has an 837 career OPS.
Huh.
That seems, I would thought like 800.
Yeah, me too. Interesting.
Yeah, and that's after 2023, where it was 706.
Right.
So, like, his Savant page, they have one light red in 73 percentile in sweet spot.
Right.
Other than that, it's just...
Which is good. I mean, yeah, that means
for
he's...
our first baseman?
Right, yes, of course. But, again, it is a small sample size, so...
Yeah, of course.
It's hard to judge too much on results, but the fact that he's still hitting the ball decently hard, he's not striking out... I'm not too worried. I think he just needs, you know, time to get going and get into a rhythm. Because a lot of time, that's what just guys need.
Yeah. Because the same thing with Stan, where, like, yesterday he went, I believe, it was, 3-for-4 with a home run. And then, obviously, has the grand slam today in a very clutch spot. He has an 89.2 exit velocity. That's 0.1 higher than Anthony Volpe.
Right.
So, that's one of those things where he gets going, Rizzo gets going, then... You have a top five that can anyone, like, is anyone beating that? Like, I don't think you can really say.
Maybe the Braves, just because it's the Braves. But
you have two of the top three outfielders in baseball, hitting-wise at least. You have Anthony Rizzo, who is a top 10 first baseman when he's not concussed, at least hitting-wise. You have Gleyber Torres, who we've talked about how he's maybe one of three players that you can pencil in for 25, 30 home runs in a season. You have Giancarlo Stanton, who has, I think since he hit 59, no one's beaten that.
Right.
In the NL, at least.
Yeah, no.
Outside of his teammate, Aaron Judge.
Right.
All right, sorry about the technical difficulties. We are back. All you missed was me talking about Jake Cousins, Kirk Cousins, cousin. Yeah, that's trippy. But, yeah, it really just comes down to the big guys not being the big guys.
Right.
And
waiting for basically three, I guess. We call it Judge, Stan, and Rizzo to quote-unquote wake up.
Yeah.
But after that, I mean, you look up and down the lineup and it it looks good. If everyone starts hitting, it's hard not to get excited.
Definitely. Trying to think of what else I wanted to talk about. So, a guy that I looked a little bit more into the numbers that I was shocked about. Oswaldo Cabrera should be doing better. He has a 178 WRC plus, and he's played three positions in nine games. He has a 375 on base. I want you to guess his WOBA, weighted on base.
As I pull it up. He has a 370, you said?
375 on base.
Like 415.
God damn, 412.
I'm so good at guessing.
But still, that is 37 point difference.
Right.
So the underlying numbers are literally saying that Oswaldo Cabrera is better than what he's doing, and he has a 178 WRC plus.
Yeah.
So that is...
I think that's huge. I mean...
That is massive.
Because Oswaldo is already, like, such a likable guy. He's such an easy guy to root for.
For your nine hitter.
Right. And if he can be a good part of their depth and just, like, that good utility guy that you can rely on, that changes a lot,
in my opinion. We just want him to be average.
Right.
They got so worried about having to play him day in, day out that they traded for John Birdie.
Right. So, and then he woke up in the Astro series and did what he did.
So it's a thing of, if he had 100 WRC+, if he was a league average player with his defense being able to play anywhere, you're more than okay with that.
Yeah.
To be one of the best hitters on this team is insane.
Definitely.
Like, I feel like people, us included, even like we saw on the radio show where we kind of like forgot about him.
Right.
Where it literally was kind of like an afterthought because he cooled down a little bit.
Right.
But he's still like insane.
Still solid, yeah. I mean, still cooled down when the hot streak was, you know, a tying home run every game.
The first three games, yeah, a tying
right.
home run.
So, yeah, I think you might want to just look into giving up switch hitting.
I 100% agree.
Because small sample size this season, but because 25 at-bats versus a righty, so as a lefty, and 7 at-bats as a righty hitter. Versus righty pitching, he has a 1.052 OPS against left-handed pitching, he has a 572.
I will say two of those at-bats were as a lefty.
Oh, really?
I know one of them, he batted lefty against Hader.
Okay.
And I want to say he had one more at-bat as a lefty.
Right.
But yeah, I know on Fangraphs you could see versus lefties as righty.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see that. But... Yeah, no, I definitely think that he should give up switch hitting because you've seen it time and time again with a lot of guys where you look at Byron Buxton. You look at Cedric Mullins, only a lefty now, right?
Yeah.
Cedric Mullins, same thing. Where like those guys gave up switch hitting, immediately had some of the best years of their career and became very good baseball players.
Really quick, he has 3 at-bats as a left-handed hitter against left-handed hitting.
Lefty versus lefty.
Yeah, lefty on lefty. 3 at-bats, 2 strikeouts, no hits.
Okay.
But 3 at-bats. So, yeah. But it's interesting to see that he is doing that.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely... It's interesting, and I'm also curious to see in a larger sample size...
Oh, for sure.
...how his righty swing would be.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he said that he's changing up his lefty swing. How would he... Because for a guy that had so much to change up, like that's a drastic change... I'm worried that going righty and lefty, changing both of them is too much.
Right.
But he also seems like he doesn't care. He's going to do whatever you need.
Yeah.
But definitely interesting overall to see.
Definitely.
Trying to think. Don't really have much more on the Yankees. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, still a good start. Just need their big guys to wake up. I mean, they're still winning games, so that's the important part, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest issues that we've kind of noted is just starters need to work deeper, and you just need your big guys to wake up.
Yeah, which seems that they're doing right now.
Right.
As Stan rolled into a double play. he gets a pass for that. Yeah, so if you want to send us off.
Yeah, so that's all you got. We'll head right into Queens.
Yeah.
Now entering Queens.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Queens, where the Mets have won baseball games.
Somehow.
In this season. So, this week they played the Tigers, Mother Nature, and the Reds. But, yeah, I mean, the rainouts were just... they're so annoying.
Dome.
Yeah, basically. But, yeah, the Mets got rained out twice earlier in the week. They had to play a doubleheader on, what was it, Thursday, which is more important than you think. I feel like it kind of had a trickle-down effect for this weekend. But they lost the first game. They lost the first game of the doubleheader, and then they won the second game of the doubleheader.
11:30 start for the first one, right?
It was 12. It was like 12:20, something like
Such
that.
So weird.
Yeah, but it was like it was a getaway day. Yeah. You were supposed to have an off day that day, too. So it's like, and then the first game went into like extra, I think it was like 11 innings. It went to extra innings.
Yeah.
So
but if you're getting, if it's a 12 o'clock game, you're getting there like 7, 8 in the morning.
Yeah.
So just, that's crazy, man. It's supposed to be your off day, but guess what?
Right.
You have to be here by 7:30.
Exactly. So it was just a really weird week to begin with, but had a couple debuts this week. Sean Manaea made his Mets debut against Detroit and pitched today's Sunday game against the Reds. Adrian Hauser made his debut. Jose Buto came up for the doubleheader. And I liked a lot what I saw from these guys. I mean, Manaea looked fantastic. Pitched 6 scoreless innings against the Tigers. His fastball sat around 94. Got 7 whiffs on that, 3 whiffs on this changeup, and 3 whiffs on the sweeper.
Twee
whiffs. But no, I liked a lot what I saw from Manaea. I think his biggest thing, and I'm not sure if this is by design, is kind of just, what's the word? Not handling, but kind of keeping that velocity.
Mm-hmm.
Like
maintaining.
Maintaining. Maintaining that velocity throughout the game, because he had some 96, 97, and then, you know, through the 5th inning, the 6th inning, it's like 94, 93. So I think, again, it could be by design, you know, just having, being able to reach back and throw 97 whenever you can, but that's one thing that I am interesting to see how it unfolds throughout the season, but his first start, fantastic. Adrian Hauser, you know, he's like your prototypical fifth starter.
Yeah.
He's going to give you 5 innings. He'll let up a few runs. But it's kind of like what you're going to get from him. That's exactly what he did in his first start. 5 innings, 1 run.
Yeah.
3 walks, 3 strikeouts. Like, that's a fifth starter.
Yeah.
And I really liked the trade when they made it. So I think Hauser is going to be a really good piece to this Mets rotation.
I was going to add to that, and he's not even the best part of that trade.
Right. I mean, Tyrone.
Tyrone.
Tyrone Taylor. He had the walk-off single in Game 2 of doubleheader to give the Mets their first win. And the results may not show it, but I think he's having some pretty good at-bats. He's playing almost every day, which is surprising. But, you know, he's just finding, like, he's just getting himself in there, you know, whether it's Marte has a day off, not a day off, but, like, he's, like, today, Marte's DHing. Sunday's game.
A half day off.
Right, half day off. Better way to put it. Or Nimmo did the same thing. He DH. So Taylor gets into the outfield. He just gets into the game.
He's going to be playing a lot more than a fourth outfielder.
Definitely. He's like a third and a half.
I was going to say 3.6.
You know, things might change when JD Martinez comes up because, you know, he will be in that DH spot every time he plays, so you can't really give those guys that half day off.
You will have 8 fielders if you put JD Martinez in the field.
Right.
Like, you make jokes about it, but another guy you were interested in was Justin Turner. So if you sign Justin Turner and JD Martinez, you may actually not have a defense.
Right.
No, yeah.
Exactly. Like, both of those guys just don't play defense. JD Martinez is definitely not going to play any defense.
He's not. You do not. Like, I still remember seeing him 2 or 3 years ago when he was with Boston.
Right.
It was funny
watching
him play defense. Like, he literally looked like a little eager.
Right. And that's when he was younger and, you know, he could run. He didn't have any, like, back issues or anything like that. And still. But no, I'm really impressed with what I've seen from Taylor. I mean, again, the results aren't too staggering. I mean, 217, 569 OPS, but, like, he's average. You're looking at his Baseball Savant, 50th percentile in, like, expected stats. He's 84th in hard hit rate. He walks a lot. He chases about average. But that's what I like to see. Like, he's he's just a good average bat that you can just get in the lineup. And
that's all you need from him.
And then if he doesn't play in the lineup, he offers some power from the bench. So, so far, love this trade.
Yeah, it definitely is one of those trades where you get more than you expect from those throw-in guys. Like, I feel that happens a good bit where it's like, oh, we'll give you him, and then I guess we'll throw in this guy. And that throw-in guy ends up being the best part of that trade.
Right. And the another, not the best thing, but a very, I'm sure, important part of that is that Taylor has another year of control.
Mm-hmm.
So he's on the team this year, and he'll be on the team next
year. He's cheap.
Right. Even better. But then the last pitcher of the Detroit series, Jose Buto, who arguably could have made the rotation over Tyler McGill out of spring training, he looked fantastic. Six innings, three hits, one run, three walks, six strikeouts. All the walks came in the first two innings. So after the second inning, did not walk a batter. So I think it was just like a nerves, just kind of getting his feet under him and all that.
You love Jose Buto.
I love Jose
You
Buto.
Love Jose. This is the Jose Buto fan club.
It is. But no, he's extremely underrated. And like I said, he could have made the rotation out of spring training. But unfortunately, he's going to be butted. That was a really bad pun. But he's going to get booted out of the rotation because the Mets signed Julio Teheran to a one-year, $2.5 million deal. It's interesting because you have guys like Buto and you have guys like Lucchesi and other guys who can come up later in the year, who can take up that spot. Not too sure how I feel about it yet. He's set to pitch Monday's game against the Braves.
Mm-hmm.
So go figure. But I'm not too sure how I feel about it yet. Because he had a really good couple starts.
Can I cut you off really quick?
Yeah.
It looked like there was a dust storm in Yankee Stadium. Like the way the dirt was, it looked like there was dust tornadoes at home plate.
Okay, Justin. Thank you for sharing. But no, so this is really interesting that they kind of went out and signed him. I mean, early in the offseason, it sounded like they were in on him before the Orioles gave him a minor league deal. But they must see something that they like with him. You know, he was on the Brewers last year. He had an ERA under 5 in his first couple starts and then an ERA under 2. I don't know why I said 5.
Yeah.
But 5's the bare minimum.
I was going to say, you're saying that like it's a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. But he ended the year with, what was it, 4? Sorry, I'm grabbing it right now. He ended the year with a 4.4 ERA and 71, 72 innings. So he's just a depth guy. I guess he's in the rotation until Senga gets back because I'm not sure how long Tyler McGill is going to get back just yet. So, again, just really interesting signing. Not really sure what to make of it just yet, so we'll see. But, yeah.
I did not know that he came up in 2011.
Yeah, he's
been around. Did not realize he was that old. I thought he was like a 2015, 2016 guy.
Let's see. How old is he? He's 33.
Yeah. He came up when he was... I did not know that. Could have...
When he's 20.
That's crazy
to
me.
Yeah. But, you know, go figure. It's his first start. This year comes against the team that brought him up. So we'll see how that
starting?
Goes. Monday's game.
Monday?
So Monday's game against the Braves.
Mm.
So that will be interesting to see. It's either going to go very well or he'll be out by the first inning.
Yeah.
But going back to the games that did happen, the doubleheader, I think, kind of showed Carlos Mendoza's... What's the word? Not... It showed that he's a rookie manager.
Mm.
You know, that's what I'm trying to get at. It wasn't the cleanest game from Mendoza. And it's hard because you want to say that guys need to just be effective and, you know, basically play their role.
Mm-hmm.
And the manager can make all the right decisions and can still blow up in their face. But he pulled Hauser extremely early. After the fifth inning, after I think it was like 60-something, 70-something pitches. So if you're playing a doubleheader, I understand it's Hauser's first start of the year, but I think you have to push him.
You have to.
Just try to get that sixth inning at least.
It's not like he's going to be worse than what you'd be putting in. You know what I mean? And I think that possibly could be part of the Aaron Boone school, where Boone would pull guys a lot. He would listen a lot more to analytics than his gut with Boone. So I don't know how much of it is he's either listening too much to analytics for the Mets, or he just never had the opportunity to really make those moves for himself or think about those moves for himself. So he never, not that he doesn't know how to, but more so he's out of practice and not used to it.
Right, right. I think that's definitely a good way to put it. But, you know, because he pulled Hauser so early, he had to, and again, this also goes to the offense that just wasn't clicking at this point. He had to use seven relievers in the first game of the doubleheader.
Yeah.
Which, again, it goes against the offense as well because you just got to score more when you have chances. You know, Ottavino blew the lead in the first game, letting a Riley Green home run in the eighth inning. And I think at this point in Ottavino's career, I think he should probably be used as a right-handed specialist. I don't really think you really want him to face lefties anymore because it just seems like he's always going to get beat by them.
Definitely.
Last year in his, I guess, so-so year, I still think it was a solid year overall, but a 789 OPS against lefties, a 582 against righties. I think it's just one of those things where you have to try to keep the lefties away from Ottavino as much as you can because that's just where he gets beat.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's just, it's tough when you have to use seven relievers in the first game of a doubleheader, and then you have another game like 30 minutes after that. So I think Mendoza got a little
trigger happy.
I think so, because, again, like 70-something pitches for Hauser, five innings.
Seven relievers is everyone except one guy in your bullpen.
Exactly. And, I mean, I'm not going to say it worked, but it kind of, the cards fell perfectly, because Jose Buto went six innings in the game two, and then Reed Garrett went three innings, and he finished the game there. So
you got lucky, though. Say Jose Buto only goes three or four innings.
Right.
If that.
Right.
What do you do? Is Reed Garrett going to pitch a shutout for the rest on there? Like, that's...
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. He got a little lucky. Kind of the cards fell right into place that's what ended up happening. But still, you used basically your entire bullpen in one day, and you don't have that day off anymore because of the rainouts, so you go right into Cincinnati. And then in Cincinnati, first game, Quintana only goes 5 2/3. So now you have to cover more innings because Quintana didn't get too deep into the game. And just, it's kind of what we're talking about with the Yankees. You know, starters aren't going deep. You're overusing the bullpen. You know, they DFA'd Michael Tonkin because he had two nightmare innings against the Tigers. And I was shocked by it. He had a really short leash on him. But he had really two really bad innings, and he got DFA'd for Julio Teheran. So it's just very similar to what you were talking about with the Yankees, that the Mets need more length from their starters, especially a guy like Quintana, who I feel like Hauser, is going to be those guys that you're going to want to push. Like, if you're going to push a guy, I don't think you want to push Severino because of his injury history. Manaea, so far, you don't need to push him.
And that's another guy, too, that has an extensive injury history as well.
Right. So I think Quintana and Hauser are the guys that you need to push. And also has to do with, you know, not being able to locate, because Quintana, again, I know Cincinnati is a tough park to pitch in because of just the wind and just the basically atmosphere of the city. But, you know, he had some inconsistent command. He didn't walk too many guys, but again, just throwing pitches, throwing more than you needed to, it hurts because, again, you need to then cover those innings from the bullpen, who's already gassed from the doubleheader.
To put it in perspective, the Reds have the third most hitter-friendly ballpark from 2022 to 2024, according to Baseball Savant.
Right. So it's just a very tough stadium to pitch in to begin with.
Mm.
But, yeah, the bullpen really kind of just... It really came to a peak in game two on Saturday's game against the Reds. Like I said, the doubleheader just absolutely killed them. And then they had an eighth inning to forget. And I just want to read how this eighth inning went. Johan Ramirez was on the mound. They were just trying to stretch him out because I think Mendoza after the game said, Ramirez, Jorge Lopez, and I think one other guy was available, and that was it. So you had three guys after Luis Severino was only able to get through five innings. But this eighth inning, a walk after being ahead 0-2, a drop third strike that allowed the runner to get to first and runner to move to third, an excuse me 62-mile-an-hour single scored a run, a three-run home run, a single, a walk, a strikeout, a sac fly, a strikeout. The Reds scored five runs in that inning and cost the Mets the game. That was one of the most frustrating losses of this year so far.
Yeah.
And the defense didn't help either. Throughout the entire game, I mean, Severino looked better. He pitched better. But he still only got to five innings because he had to throw 20, 30-something pitches in the second inning because Tyrone Taylor got tied up in left field and a ball dropped basically right in front of him. It looked like he lost it in the sun. McNeil completely booted a ground ball, which he should have had. And this team was just making little mistakes and mental mistakes throughout the entire series almost. When David Stearns and the front office was stressing run prevention and defense and all that, and you are just giving runs away. You're just handing them the game. I mean, so far, the Mets rank 26th in outs above average at minus six outs above average. So you're basically giving the other team six more outs to play with because you're not getting the outs that should be.
That should be.
Right.
That an average defense makes.
Exactly. So it's just extremely frustrating. And it just came to, like I said, a peak in that eighth inning. But again, it was also.
You can't even get mad at the relievers.
Right, because who else?
Exactly. The starters aren't going deep. You had Mendoza, who just was pulling guys when he shouldn't have been. And it was funny, because when Nick left the room, you would not have expected the Mets to have been losing. He just had kind of that serial killer smile, where it was like, you could just tell the voices in his head were going crazy, and he's like, I'm going to kill someone. And like, the inside of here, I'm going to kill someone. Yeah. But he was just, like, fine on the outside.
Because it was that eighth inning just, that was a Mets inning. You know, that's really all you can say, and it's really unfortunate. Yeah. But it's kind of just like, oh, okay.
Yep.
Oh, you struck him out?
Same old Mets.
Oh, went back to the backstop? Oh, he reached first? Oh, okay. Oh, infield's in? Oh, wait, 62-mile-an-hour single gets through? Oh, all right, yeah. Oh, there's the three-run home run.
The voices, they started winning.
Okay. All right. So that's how that's going to go. Cool. Makes sense. Whatever. That brings me to my next point.
Vladdy is so fat. Go on.
Wow. Rude. But Omar Narvaez, I hate to just keep knocking on him.
Oh, you love your Omar.
Because we talked about him last episode as well. And he had a good day offensively at Saturday's game. But his defense is just, it's not even like just plain defense and blocking and framing and all that. It's just overall, like, mental mistakes. So you have a guy in first and third. I think it was two outs. Guy goes to steal second. Why are you throwing down to second when there's a guy on third who then steals home?
Mm-hmm.
Why are you throwing down? Unless you're setting up a play that the Mets have done in the past where you throw down to second, but someone runs in the middle to catch it and throw right back home.
With no intention of actually getting the runner at second.
Right. But they were fully going to get or going for the out at second when there was a guy on third who then stole home. Like, it's things like that where it's just
Little League stuff.
Right. It's like mental mistakes and just not, it doesn't look like they're fully thinking or like they fully grasp the situation.
Yeah.
Like situational
the baseball
awareness.
Yeah.
Right.
Baseball IQ.
Yeah, basically. And it's very, very frustrating. So that Saturday game was a game to forget. But
game?
Saturday.
I don't remember it.
Me neither. But good thing that came out of Friday's game was Beatty looks really good at third base so far. His defense so far has been strides better than last year. And he's even hitting cleanup a few games when Alvarez got he got a day off, and then I think they gave Nimmo a day off. They put Beatty in cleanup spot. And I think it's really interesting how much Mendoza, and I'm sure it's also the front office, is giving trust to these younger guys. Like Alvarez is basically your cleanup guy, which we talked about last week. And the very next game, he was
hitting
cleanup.
We were pushing for him to be the cleanup guy, and then
right.
5 minutes after we stopped recording, the Mets lineup came out and he was hitting cleanup.
Right.
Clean off.
He was hitting cleanup. And then now Beatty's basically hitting fifth a lot of the time. So you have Alvarez fourth, Beatty fifth, and you're pushing a lot of the veterans down. And I think it says a lot about the trust that they have in these guys. And B, it shows that, they have been able to handle those positions. I think says a lot about the mental stability of these young kids. And I think Alvarez has been great so far. Beatty looks much better. If these both guys can just, really figure it out, then this lineup looks a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Because you're putting in two guys, or at least one guy that was a non-factor last year. And you're also putting in Alvarez, who struggled when he first came up. Granted, he was much better once he finally got his feet under him. But starting off with him having his feet under him and that year of development. And then you're also having Beatty, who, like you said, not only offensively but defensively looks significantly better. That's going to be a lot better than people are going to realize. Because like the casual fan will be like, oh, Brett Beatty sucked last year. And people just forget that players can actually improve, especially young players.
Exactly.
So that's very important, I think, for the Mets' future. Like, because how you feel about this year, this year, the worst thing that could happen would have been them not living up to their potential, or
Definitely.
At least showing some progression.
Right. Look, if this year doesn't go as they plan, if Beatty and Alvarez and whoever else gets the call later in the year shows improvement and shows that they're a major league capable player, people are not going to like it, but I see this season as a win.
Definitely.
Because this is Stern's first year in the front office. He needs to see who's going to be a factor, who's not, so then he can make changes and make moves as necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest play that Beatty made on Friday that made me kind of just like step back, like, wow, like he really made improvements, is there was a ball that was hit more so to shortstop, but Beatty ran in, basically not taking the ball from Lindor, but he kind of took initiative that I think he had the better angle, ran in front of Lindor to throw the guy out at first. Last year, Brett Beatty doesn't even try to make that play. Forget about actually successfully making the play.
Don't want to step on the veteran's toes. Right.
And obviously Lindor right after is like, patting him on the back, like, let's go. Like, that's a great thing about Lindor too, but that play is what kind of stuck out to me because, again, last year doesn't even try to make it.
Yeah. And that's regardless of the play, it's also a thing of just instincts, where that is a big baseball IQ play, where you were saying the Mets were lacking baseball IQ at certain points.
Right.
That is huge to have those young guys already have, because you can't teach instincts.
Yeah.
So to have the confidence, which may be even more important, but the combination of the confidence plus instincts is huge.
Definitely, 100%. And then going from, I feel like we talked a lot about pitching, talked about like defense, but the offense has looked better, still not quite where you want to be. I mean, again, Saturday's game was just mental mistakes, defensive mistakes, and pitching, but they scored 6 runs at the end of the day, and that's much better than, they scratched out a win, I think, with 3 runs on Friday, and then they barely scored against the Tigers. They looked better. They looked more competent. They're working counts. They're working pitches, pitchers. They're getting the starters out early. But, you still need the big guys to step up a little bit. Nimmo had a good game on Saturday. Lindor is having a good game Sunday right now with a double and a home run. Alonso, kind of scuffling a little bit right now. Not much, too much is happening. You know, McNeil looks a little better. He had a home run on Friday. Marte's starting to scuffle a little bit, but as long as he's healthy, I think that's the biggest thing. So you need those guys to really pick it up. And it's very similar to the Yankees. Mm-hmm. You know, if you really big picture, kind of like in a vacuum, you need your starters to go deeper. You're going to gas your bullpen, and you need the big guys to step up in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
But they look better. And I will say, I'm not saying they're getting unlucky, but they're hitting the ball hard,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're dealing with a 2-2-2 BABIP right now, batting average balls in play. But at the same time, they played some really good defensive teams. So far, the Brewers are first in outs above average, the Tigers are fourth, and then the Reds are in the middle of 16th.
Mm-hmm.
So they have played some really good defensive teams, which is probably aiding that low BABIP because they're just making plays. But they look better. You just need the guys to step up.
Definitely.
And then the last thing I want to touch on has to do with the lineup, but J.D. Martinez, he will not be joining the team in Atlanta this week. Came out this morning that he's dealing with overall, quote-unquote, body soreness. I'm just tossing that up to, you know, a quick ramp-up. You know, he didn't have spring training, so you're kind of missing out that, month and a half of spring training. You're trying to get ready and...
You're rushing it.
Yeah,
you're making a month and a half process, 2 weeks?
Right, 3 maybe. So he will not be joining the team at Atlanta. The earliest now is the Mets' next homestand, which will begin Friday against the Royals. So we'll revisit that next week. But yeah, definitely looked a lot better this week. So I'm kind of happy with how things are turning. I mean, there's still 2-6 as we record right now. So again, the record isn't there.
They are winning right now, though.
They are winning
3-1 in the top of the 8th.
Right. So they look better. I think it's just pitching needs to be a little more lengthy, get more length out of those starting pitchers, and then you don't have to rely on that bullpen so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because the starters haven't really been the issue so far. It's really just offense hasn't been hitting, and the bullpen has been a little iffy, but that kind of goes back to the starter length. But if I can grab it very quickly.
What are you looking for, like innings pitched based off like starters and all that?
No. Currently, the Mets have the 6th best team ERA in baseball at 2.92.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look at starting pitching, they have the 3rd best at 2.18. But if you look at innings pitched, they are at 22nd with 41 innings pitched for their starters. So I think that kind of paints the picture there. So, you know, this week, really looking for length from the starters and hopefully just more of an offensive presence, even if you're not scoring runs, just like more competent at-bats, just more awareness of where the game is. I mean, they've had a really good, I want to say, like, baseball-y game so far this Sunday, but we'll see. That's all I have. Yeah. If you have anything else to add.
Not really. Just overall, not the start you were looking for.
Right.
Good to see guys like Lindor do better. Because like you said today, not sure if you said it on podcast, but you were definitely saying before the show how you're like, oh my God, 2 extra base hits. You're like freaking out about that before. Definitely a great sign moving forward for the offense, especially from the young guys. I'd be very interested to see with the pitching where you said very like third in league in ERA, and I think you said 26th?
Low in innings.
I'd be very interested to see if you get to more 15th in innings, if you're more 15th in ERA.
Right.
Where I think there definitely is some positive and negative regression for innings and the ERA.
For sure.
But that also has to do with the bullpen and so many other things.
Yeah,
definitely.
But just a lot of things to kind of be happy with this week. Obviously, like you said, still not the start you're looking for, but trending upwards.
Definitely.
But if that's all you got.
That's all right.
So thank you guys for watching. Thank you guys for listening. remember to follow us on Instagram.
Can I say one thing, actually?
Oh, yeah.
We may not post that much tomorrow. We may be a little out of it because we are going to the Yankee game.
We
are
going
to be sucked in the solar eclipse.
Yes.
We're going to a black hole.
Yes.
But
yeah, we'll be at the Yankee game tomorrow, so that'll be fun. But maybe get some videos from us. But
yeah.
But yeah, no, so remember to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok. Remember to subscribe on YouTube and follow us on Spotify. And remember, on Fridays, we host the Triborough Sports Show on 88.7 WNHU. The links are in the description. So if you want to hear more from us and more talking from more than just baseball, listen to us there. We're on from 4 to 6 every Friday. But without further ado, thank you guys.
Yeah. See you guys next week.